Hi, this is Professor Tom. We've had kind of a crazy week here at Studio 1A in Rogers Park, Chicago. You see, we haven't been recording shows since I got back in town about a week ago, mostly because, well, Miss Gypsy had started a new job, moved into a new apartment, and got a new dog all in the same weekend. She's apparently trying to kill herself with stress. Right as she gets all that settled and the dust starts to collect around her life, I say, okay, let's get together and record. Fine, no problem. And, well, wouldn't you know it, she got sick. Looks like she's going to be out of commission until probably early next week, and it's been so long I wanted to get something in the feed. I keep getting emails, when are you going to start, when are you going to start, when are you going to start? So this won't be a regular episode of Kinky Sex Radio. So if this is your first time, you've just stumbled upon our little show, I'd suggest you go back to episode 20 at least, maybe even 15 or so, to kind of catch up, hear what the show normally sounds like. What I'm going to do is play for you a conversation between myself and Cunning Minx. Now, Cunning Minx is the host, creator, producer of Polyamory Weekly, a really good podcast that's also on the topic of sex, well, polyamory and the social more than the sexual, but it's a kinky sort of show as far as the vanillas are concerned, and it's right here in Chicago, and so we thought we should get together, and well, mostly we just kind of played with the equipment and screwed around, but we also got into about a half-hour conversation about kink and our feelings on it. I thought you might enjoy it. Hopefully you'll like it, and it'll tide you over, if nothing else, so I can get Miss Gypsy in the studio when she's feeling better and record a proper sex show for you. Thanks a lot.
This show is a member of the Pod Riot Network.
Let the riot begin.
On podriot.com.
Let's get into the kinks of the Cunning Minx.
Yay.
So we've established, and if you listen to the show Polyamory Weekly, you find out that you do have a kinky side. That's an understatement. You have a couple of kinky sides. So let's go down the list. What are you into? What do you like? You're submissive.
Submissive. Definitely.
What do you do with
submissive?
That?
I've really come to enjoy service a lot. I am Great Answer's collared slave, and we actually are not 24/7. We don't even live in the same town, so it's very special. My collar is actually locked away in a box. I can't even touch it until he comes in and we do a ritual and he collars me. So it really is a nice way to delineate the service space.
Is it an elaborate ritual or just a simple little
thing?
No. 20
it's a simple
seconds to 20 minutes? What?
No, it's just a couple seconds. It's basically, you know, kneeling, and he has a certain way that he puts it on, and you know, there's a little breathing, but yeah, it's like 5-10 seconds, but it's just clearing the headspace and creating that headspace.
Nice.
Which I love the service. It's so nice sometimes to just not have to worry about myself. Someone else will worry about me, because I live alone. I'm very independent. I have to take care of myself. It's so nice not to worry about myself. I just worry about him. And then there's also, of course, you know, the impact play. I'm really into spanking and flogging and caning. I love to scream and cry. I'm loud. I'm very expressive. As a matter of fact, at Ohio Leatherfest, Janet Hardy's demo slut didn't show up. So I got to be her, you know, demo for, and it was actually for a demonstration on, you know, hearing feedback and responding to the submissive in a scene. And of course, I'm actually a really good person for that because, you know, I mean, everything is, the breathing, moaning, yelling, screaming, you know, the guttural, it's so clear exactly what I'm going through from the sounds that I'm making and what my body is doing. So, you know, plus it was really fun because Janet Hardy was spanking me and eating me. Let's see, what else am I into? It's funny. We discover, I mean, new things all the time, and things change depending upon my mood. And I also really, I use the scenes and I use BDSM as an outlet for emotions and anger and crying. Because when I was a kid, my mom told me not to cry. Actually, she told me not to cry unless I was in physical pain. So there's a way
so
to make
technically
your
you're still following her rules, right?
There's a way to make your kid kinky. Thanks, Mom.
Make your kid seek physical pain as an emotional release. But yeah, that's perfect.
There you go.
That's the exact way to create a kinky kid, I would think.
So I can't really cry in public. And I can't really cry in front of, and I can't even cry by myself, even when I really need to.
No, meaning you don't cry in public in a scene, or meaning you count a scene as not public?
I'm not like at the office or on the
all
bus
right.
or whatever. Yeah, no.
Could you Xerox this? I can't do it!
And I mean, it takes, but I really need to scream and cry and get out my tension and frustration. And I don't really have another way to do that. And I've, you know, tried all kinds of different things like working out and, you know, meditation and stuff like that. And those work to an extent, but this is really how I release the tensions of my everyday life. And it works really great for us, like especially when we've had a miscommunication, an argument. We, you know, some people have makeup sex. We have makeup scenes because even when we, you know, have understood each other, we've come to understanding, we've communicated and all that, there's still that, your body is still holding all the tension from the anger. It doesn't just go away because you now understand and, you know, still love the person and all that. So that's, seeing is a great way to get rid of, you know, residual anger. I know Great Answer, you know, sometimes he just wants to wail on someone. He's a very sensitive Dom.
And if you don't know, Great Answer is the host of Rope Weekly.
Oh, yeah.
So a huge advocate of rope bondage, specifically, yes, among other, I'm sorry, just so people know.
Which
not everyone listens to all the kinky podcasts like you and I do. Who the hell's Great Answer? So both
Great
your
is, yeah.
polyamorous lover and the host of a podcast called Rope Weekly.
And the host of Rope Weekly at graydancer.com/ropeweekly. And which leads into another kink of mine, the Shibari rope bondage.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you and Great Answer are going to have a lot of problems.
Well, actually, no, we're poly, so not necessarily.
Oh, this is true.
You know, he could have another rope slut, and that would be fine. But I happen to really enjoy the sensuality of ropes and the restrictiveness. I also have a corset fetish. So I love, like, even before I was new, I was really kinky and got onto the scene, I loved being bound in a corset and then that release. You know, when you take it off, we call it a corset gagum. Corset gagum. That's lovely. Corset gasm or a bodice gasm.
Corset gagum.
That's just.
Which is a scene I did
really
once.
Interesting.
It was awesome. It was me and two girls. We did corset gagum. It was great.
I'm trying to picture that. It's like, and eat this corset.
I'll draw
eat
you
slut.
Something later. I got it on
eat
film. It's
corset
brilliant.
Whore.
Of course, eat it, you corset whore. So you started from corsetry and then went into, yeah. I guess, and so that sort of opened up the idea of bondage. Because I've heard that a lot too, that corsetry is a gateway drug.
That's true, it really is.
Start with the corsets, you know, playing at the Ren Fair or whatever, yeah. And then you go, hey, this is kind of nice. You know what I might like? I might like being tied to a bed. Hey, I like that. I might be tied from the ceiling. I might be, and next thing you know, you're on stage and you're being tied, and you're like, damn that corset. Damn it.
Yeah. I always like the feeling of being
You have a favorite rope?
Restrained. Favorite rope?
Yeah, favorite rope, favorite. I mean, dating the guy who does Rope Weekly, I'm imagining you have experienced more than the average girl here.
I do, and it's actually Great Answer's least favorite rope. I like the nylon. I like the MFP.
Nylon, yeah.
Because I like it's smooth and soft against my skin. And I also love the way it photographs much more than hemp. I don't think photographs as well. And it's also scratchy. And
I like the colors,
it's
too.
It's not as sensual. Yeah, and the colors aren't as shiny and pretty. And it's just not as sensual to me. And however, of course, the reason that most rope people prefer hemp, not just because of the Japanese snob factor, but because it doesn't slip. Because the nylon is shiny and slippery, it will slip and your tie may not hold as easily. It's just more comfortable for me.
Do you have a favorite way to be tied up? I mean, or several favorite ways to be tied up? I mean, what are the pros and cons of, for example, four corners to the four-poster bed, a bondage in a painful position, suspension bondage? Do you have any particular...
It's more about the context for me.
Okay.
Than about the particular... As a matter of fact, I work very hard not to learn any ties and not to know how those things work, because to me, I can get into headspace with rope just like that. I mean, he can drag the ropes across my body, and I can close my eyes even in the middle of a busy club, and I'll be there, and I'll be in the headspace, and it's just him and me and the
wow.
rope. And it's, I, and you know, when he's tying it on me, I don't want to be sitting there thinking, oh, he's doing a Corrado with the blah, blah, blah. I don't want that. I want to be able to just relax and feel him through the rope as an extension of him, and you know, of course my body's going to respond to whatever tie, but I don't even notice what he's doing. I just notice how I feel. So I really want to focus on it, everything else sort of melting away and sort of the physical and emotional, psychological, whatever response to the tie into the scene. So it really, I mean, we've done suspensions, we've done inverted suspensions. You know, he tries a lot of stuff on me, but it's really more about the energy than about, oh, I like being tied up, you know, with this foot up in the air.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned the scene a lot when we were talking earlier. You mentioned, so I'm getting the impression you're into some rather elaborate acting here. Some rather, you know, like scenes that are fun, improv and
yeah.
complicated and quasi-scripted. And, you know what I mean? Like some of the stuff you're describing to me, go through some of your favorite scenes. And if you don't mind, and then what sort of level of realism you put to them, little tips and tricks you've got, because that's one thing, I don't have a high level of reality for scenes that I do. You know, really, it's about, you know, a lab coat, done, doctor, finished. I don't have a lot of toys beyond what is that particular person's fetish. Like if someone really likes a speculum, fine, I'll go get a speculum.
Yeah.
But I don't have a bunch of medical toys laying around for aesthetics because none of the submissives I've been with currently have needed that. They just need to, okay, there, done. You're a doctor now, and I'm a naughty nurse, and let's begin, and we're finished. Is that the same for you, or do you like to put a lot of window dressing and costuming?
Well, I do love costuming, to be sure. I mean, even ever since I was a little kid. I mean, my mom used to, like, you know, gather things, hand-me-downs and stuff just for me to play dress-up with. And I've always loved that, so that's definitely an aspect of it for me. But, you know, again, I've never had a lot of money for my kink, so a lot of my costuming is, there's some crossover from the SCA, from those things that I had. A lot of things I've worked in exchange for my costumes. Fetish rummage sales are great. I've gotten so many great things because I'm an odd size. I'm tiny, tiny, tiny. So I can wear a lot of stuff that no one else can wear. So I can, you know, get stuff that way. So I am into the costuming, but it's really more about, you know, it really depends on my mood and what lover I'm with and what they need and want. I mean, Grey Dancer and I can very easily have a scene with just us, no toys, just spanking, you know, impromptu, where we are. I'm a big believer that you don't need all the stuff. You know, if you can't just scene in your house with stuff from your kitchen, then are you really not a dom? But it depends. I mean, the thing that I mentioned earlier I think you're referring to was with Vincer T, who is much more, he's a live-action role-playing geek, and he's a huge gaming geek, and has gamers over every Thursday for those crazy fantasy things that I don't understand. And so for him, getting into character and role-playing is really important. And so once I discovered that, then we started playing with the idea of actually having characters and doing things like...
Recurring characters?
I don't think we've actually ever repeated any. It was, we've done things where there's a, you know, a young American traveling in Morocco and the drug dealer sort of forces her against her will, which was his idea. I did an impromptu, the one I referred to earlier was a lab assistant. We'd actually just gone out for a drink and we were stuck in the parking garage in the car on the way back. It, you know, we just couldn't get out of the garage. It was going to be a long wait. And so I just jumped into a random character I just picked out of the blue that, oh, you know, Dr. So-and-so. I said, oh, I'm your lab assistant that we just went out for a drink after a late night at work, and I pretended to be young and impressionable. And he laughed at me at first, but then he just jumped right into it. And, you know, by the time we got home, under the pretense of, oh, I read all your papers. What? You have more at home? Oh, gosh, I'd love to read those if it wouldn't impose on you too much. And we actually made going home and everything work within the scene, and it was really incredible. And I also, lap dancer, stripper, and hooker come up a lot because I have a lap dance fetish. I love giving lap dances. I just fucking love giving lap dances. You know, if my knees were better, I would be a professional stripper. I just can't do it. And so I love the idea. I've played more than once with both Grey Dancer and Fencer T about the stripper at the strip club who's giving the lap dance, and either the guy coerces her into doing more, or, you know, I've even taken a little bit more charge and try to coerce the guy into, you know, coming to the back room and, oh, you know, you're different, you're special, I'll give you a blowjob and I'll fuck you. And we do. And of course, what a great fantasy for the guy of, like, here's a stripper who will actually, you know, give a lap dance and then fuck him.
Right, that's the fantasy you're paying for.
Yeah, exactly.
Comes true in this case.
And I love doing that. That's so much fun for me. That's one of my favorites. And we've done the hooker who shows up at your door and, you know, that sort of thing.
Hooker at a hotel is one of my favorites. You're in a hotel room,
yeah.
And the wife or the girlfriend or whatever shows up as the paid escort.
Mm.
Or better yet, pick her up at the bar. I had a long-term girlfriend, like live-in, three-year thing, and that was one of her favorites. Was we had this little cheapo motel down the road, but they had a bar. And it's perfectly suited for our purposes. So we'd rent a room for the night, because we're both in college. So we scrape a little money together and rent a room for the night. And then go pick her up at the bar. And then it's just the idea of new, a different bed, a different room. It sort of excite the senses a little bit.
Yeah.
And move on from there. I want to ask you a question that's been something that I've been trying to figure out forever. I have this theory that SCA, Renfair, mm-hmm. and kink, like hand in glove.
Yes.
Everyone I know, who is really kinky. And by this, I mean they take it as a serious hobby. They've got a couple hundred bucks worth of equipment. They've got, let's say, five or six books on the subject, maybe erotica, blah, blah, blah. So they're into kink. Are into the damn Renfair.
Yeah.
I've been to one Renfair ever in my life. And it was in Michigan. It was quite a nice one. Michigan Renfair.
Oh, I love that fair, yeah.
For like 5 hours. That's it. And while I was there, completely by accident, wandered into a goddamn discussion about kink.
just a bunch of girls in corsets sitting around, two mm-hmm. seconds of the conversation, they're talking about being paddled.
Yep.
And this has just solidified the stereotype in my brain. So you're in this scene. Is it just that prevalent? Is it just that big of a crowd? Because Star Trek conventions, you don't have the crowd. Well, they don't get laid. But I'm a huge Trekkie, and none of my Trek friends get laid. But, I mean, it's odd to me because Ren Faire also seems to be a place where there is a predominance of females. And so I might just start telling my friends, like, you know, it's at least 50-50 at every Ren Faire. The Michigan Ren Faire was probably closer to 70-30.
Really?
I saw a lot of ladies there.
Didn't notice that. But, you know, the thing is,
the guys were more involved in the shows. That was very male-centric. Like, it was a lot of fencing and jousting, a few token females, which I guess fits the culture, you know. But there were at least 70% women there, which is kind of a weird thing.
I never noticed a ratio like that before. It's interesting. I mean,
well, it's because you're not a guy. I pay attention to this stuff.
Well, no, because actually the Ren Faire is when I started getting really comfortable flirting with women because fair is where everything goes. So even though I didn't consider myself bisexual or lesbian or anything, it was where I was comfortable. That used to be my escape, was going to Ren Faire because I could flirt. I could say things that, you know, in a normal bar would get me fucking raped.
Right.
You know, I just could, and I could go and I could be this like wildly sexual and wildly flirty person and wouldn't get in trouble for it. With both men and women. And because so many women there were so open and were bisexual or whatever, it, you know, I felt very safe and very comfortable doing that. And especially because I tend to go to the same fair year after year. I know people that if anybody ever said or did anything inappropriate with me, they're like five huge fucking Scotsmen with 6-foot claymores that would beat the shit out of them. So I really
felt very
safe.
You think maybe
that's
the attraction, maybe because that Ren Faire, I guess, archetype, that stereotype of a Ren Faire, Rennie geek, right?
Yeah.
Is already rather open-minded sexually. Even if they don't practice deviant sexuality, they
deviant.
Are. I love that word. I want to reclaim that word. Like gay guys say fag, I want to reclaim the word deviant.
We're deviant.
To the community. I want to use that as a positive. It's just my little thing. Like I say kinkster and I say deviant all the time. Because I like being deviant. I think it's fun. I think that because they already are at least, if not approving, aware and kind of a live and let live sort of c'est la vie sort of attitude, that maybe the kinksters go to a Ren Faire once and then it's comfortable. So the same reason you're saying, oh, I can mention spanking and no one either assumes I'm a slut, assumes I'm a pervert, or assumes I'm the bad version of deviant. Maybe that's the reason it follows. Maybe you create an open environment and people will just flock to it.
I think that could be part of it, but I think there is some actual crossover, like the kind, and I'm not sure exactly what it is, but the sort of thing that
the love of leather. It's got to be the love of leather.
You know, actually,
that's the connection right there.
It could be because I had a leather
and stocks.
Also had a leather fetish from a very young age. Like what I used to do, even again before I was kinky, I would go into the Ren Faire and I'd go into the leather stores and just take in a big deep breath of the leather smell, which would just so fucking turn me on. But I wonder if it's something that, because the sort of Ren Faire SCA thing is already, it really is an alternative community.
Mm-hmm.
It is a community where people feel that they can be themselves, even if it's a little different, alternative. And I wonder if it just makes it easier for people who do have a kink to let that kink come out.
Well, you've got a lot of bondage equipment still in use in that era. You know, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it's around.
Yeah.
You've got the leather. You've got, let's call it a promiscuous attitude. I mean, that's kind of putting it more an attitude than a behavior.
I wouldn't say promiscuous, but I would say a level of comfort with sexual expression.
You've got kind of a tourist mentality in that I can do things here and then go back home.
Yes.
Which, being from New Orleans, I saw you get laid a lot in New Orleans because people can go get laid and then get back on the plane. Add that with the fact that there's this male dom fem sub dynamic in the Middle Ages, which most people, regardless of where they go later, that's their gateway into kink for the majority of people is, okay, I'm the girl, you tie me up, or I'm the girl, you hold me down. I'm the guy. And then you discover, well, actually, I'm the guy. I'd rather be submissive. You're the girl, be a dominatrix. Mm-hmm. But I think if you start at an early age, this has been my experience with people I talk to, they started in that sort of mommy, daddy, you know what I mean? Dad's on top, mom's on bottom sort of play thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's already built into it. I think when you put all those elements together, you're making kinky stew. You know, you're really going to get, you see what I'm saying? Like, so I can understand how it's
disgusting.
Attractive. And, and you know, you start going to the Ren Faire at 16, 17 when your sexuality is not that robust. By the time you're 25, 26, that feels, you know, it feels more natural to experiment almost. So I wonder if they create kinksters or if kinksters flock there.
I think, I wouldn't say the Ren Faire creates kinksters because I believe that kink is something that is innocent.
Well, I don't mean creates. I mean enables, yeah. You know.
I would be comfortable with the word enables. Yeah. Now that it's funny you mentioned that because I'm trying to remember. I think I first went to a Ren Faire when I was about 18, 19, 20, something like that. And for me, it was a form, I didn't realize it then, but for me, it was a form of sexual expression that I didn't get being a good Bible-thumping Christian in Texas.
And now, you were until 18, 19, still a good Bible-thumping Christian? You were still a good girl at that point?
I didn't have sex for the first time until I was 23. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, late bloomer.
And I'm not counting technical virgin either. We're for like complete virgin, no oral sex, no anal sex, nothing
so
until I was 23.
Oh, you poor thing. Now you're making up for lost time, thank God.
Well, you know, and actually, I wouldn't, you know, the thing is, I'm very happy with the way things went. It did avoid making a lot of stupid mistakes that people did when they were, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18, and didn't even fucking know what sex was, or, you know, they were operating under all these misconceptions and they didn't have the emotional maturity to deal with it. I mean, yeah, it kind of sucks that the thing is, I don't really feel like I personally missed out on a lot because I can do it all now. I've got, like, you know, another good 40, 50 years in me, and now I can make intelligent decisions about what I want to do with my sexuality and not be embarrassed about it and not have to apologize for it and not have to hide it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I told that. I guess it's just coming from a perspective of someone who started earlier. Not much. I mean, I was a late bloomer, too, just not quite as late. But I mean, a guy, we get different pressure. You know
yeah.
what I mean? It's
what's late for a guy is
yeah. It's genteel for a woman to hold on to her virginity amongst her friends. It's she's keeping the promise. For guys, you're a pussy, man. Get out there. You know, there's this male pressure. You know, we really push each other to do that. So I guess it's just a matter of yeah. But now that I think about it, I've really over romanticized those earliest trysts. They weren't the. I mean, yeah. I'd much rather. You almost want to go back and do it again. Like, if I could go back to those old lovers with what we both know now,
yeah.
Oh boy, could we fuck. Oh, it'd be great.
Yeah, I don't feel like I missed out on a whole lot by not having, you know, drunken sex at a frat house when I was in college.
Come on, you missed awkwardly having a guy stumble over you and put his knee in your stomach. How can you not
exactly.
lament that?
I mean, you know, I've had amazing weekend-long wild threesome sex with two men that I care about very deeply. So I had emotional energy.
Take that, Bible thumpers.
Tons and tons. I mean, I think I stopped counting blowjobs I was giving at like, you know, 12. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to just keep going because it's like that's also one of my favorite things in the world to do. I'm not happy unless I have a cock in my mouth.
Hey, there's a bumper sticker.
So does that count? I have a blowjob fetish. Does that count as a fetish?
Yeah, I think anything can be fetishized. Because anything can be totemized according to psychologists, right? You can totemize pens because
yeah.
OCD, you have to have 9 of them on your desk. You can have 9 matches, 9 toothpicks, 9 hair pieces, 9 shoes. You know, you will totemize almost randomly, meaning whatever your experience was as a kid becomes your totemization with psychological disorders. So my theory goes, and this is, if you can totemize, then you can fetishize.
Mm.
Because you could have a water fetish, meaning drinking water. You could get horny. I mean, it's the brain. So if it deviates in the slightest variance, who knows what it's going to land on. I mean, imagine what you dream. There was a cockroach, but it was my dad. I just kind of knew it was my dad. You know these Kafka-esque dreams, Jeff. And so I think the same thing can happen with fetish, where you could have a pen fetish, a pencil fetish, a shoelace fetish, because nothing will be as odder, really, than if you think about it, a shoe fetish. Yeah. And that's common.
That's really common.
But, I mean, the foot fetish makes sense because you've got pheromones and such, but to take it one step over is not something usually sexuality does. That's the higher brain functions that can make these connections. So if a shoe fetish is common, then everything's open. That's sort of my opinion. So absolutely, you can have a blowjob fetish. And God love you for it. There isn't a guy out there who wouldn't support a blowjob fetish tax break of some kind.
You know, it's really funny that when I think about it again, like you think back to childhood, and I was always really orally fixated. Like I actually sucked my fingers until a really inappropriately old age. I don't remember what it was, but it was, you know.
Were you driving? Yeah, driving down the road with a finger in your mouth.
I'm like 16. Ah. And, you know, even my earliest fantasies, before I even knew what sex was, I mean, I started masturbating at a very young age. It was like, you know, 8,
well,
five,
at least
six,
you were
seven,
doing
eight,
that.
Something
one
like
thing that.
That
scared me when you said you hadn't had sex till you were 23 is every time a woman, and I get this question a lot, they're having difficulty achieving orgasm. I say masturbate more.
Yeah.
Really learn yourself.
Yeah.
And don't just go spend $200 on sex toys. You know, buy little cheap ones, but buy a dozen of them. Get a variety. Find what works. Yeah. So at least, least you were learning your sexuality so that when you did finally go out and fuck or what have you, you at least knew what turned you on.
Well, I didn't know that was sex. Yeah, of course, when I first started doing it, I was just like, oh, this is a thing I do. And I would sleep. I loved sleeping.
I thought it was magic.
Sleeping late on Saturday mornings. I'm always horny when I wake up, like from a nap or from
Me
sleeping.
Too. Yeah.
Always horny. And so, you know, when I was a kid, I would sleep late on Saturday mornings, and then I would masturbate and go watch cartoons.
There you go.
That's and so still, I was like all relaxed. And
are you kidding? That's my weekend. The hell? I'm 33. That sounds awesome.
So it's really nice, actually, that if, you know, for some reason we come back from the club or whatever and we're like too tired on Friday night or Saturday night, you know, Minx is going to be in the morning, you know, if I wake up and, you know, there's a cock there, I'm pretty much going to be, you know, playing, sucking something on it. So, yeah.
There you go. So what is, let's go through, so we covered submission, we covered the rope, we covered the, did we miss anything fun?
I'm sure we missed a lot of
fun. Oh,
tell me
about being, doing the public thing, being a service, what's the phrase I'm looking for here?
A service slave.
No, but in conventions and such, you do the, like with Great Answer, you're tied up on stage. What the hell's the word I'm looking for
Demo
here?
Demo sub?
Thank you. Jesus.
Demo slut.
Yeah, tell me about being a, because I'm going to edit that whole rambling bit, so let me start over. I hate it when I can't grab a word, you know? On the radio, it's even worse. We have blah, blah, because you got to keep talking. You can't just have dead air. Tell me about being a demo slut or demo sub. How's that differ from a scene? I mean, you're in public. It's sort of a job. It's sort of a demo. How's it? Because I've never done that, you know?
It usually feels a little different to me because I don't tend to drop into subspace or I don't as deeply when we're actually doing a performance or a demonstration or what have you, because I am, you know, I have a performance and teaching and speaking background. So when I'm up in front of people, I'm watching, you know, how I'm standing, what I'm doing very carefully because it's about them. I don't really feel like I can kind of drop off into subspace and just whatever, because it's about teaching them something. But that's really fun. I mean, and we do that a lot at, we'll do it at clubs. We'll do performances at, you know, noisy nightclubs and at conventions. We'll, you know, be teaching rope energy workshops or what have you. And it's just really fun.
Did you have an exhibitionist streak?
Oh,
is that, yes.
Do you think?
But I mean, before you got into demo, is that why you're like, hey, I'd love to do that?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing sounds hotter than being spanked on stage. Jesus, I can't talk today. Spanked on stage in front of 300 people or at a noisy club where half people aren't watching. You know, I mean, like that's a special sort of thing.
I've always been an exhibitionist, again, like from very young. I always, even when I was like shy and withdrawn, I loved being in front of people, got into theater kind of young. And
that's a gateway drug too.
Oh, yes, it is. And, and you know, the first like sort of pseudo kinky thing that I did, can you guess? Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
That's a huge, mm-hmm.
That's a great
people ask me
thing.
How to meet someone who's kinky. I'm like, Rocky Horror
Picture Show.
I send them to Ren Fairs and then Rocky Horror. I'm like, if you can't meet someone who's kinky there, just give it up. Just be vanilla. You apparently don't have the gift.
And so I love, I mean, that gave me a, you know, excuse to prance around in my underwear and say really sexual things.
Transsexuals.
Oh, yeah, it was great. Yes. It was great. And I was always.
Tap dancing. It's very kinky.
Always very exhibitionistic, to be sure. And that actually has given me a good way to channel that because it was a problem with some of my friends, you know, being an attention whore. Well, you know, if I wasn't acting, if I wasn't on stage and I wasn't, you know, out being kinky because I didn't know I was kinky at the time, I would do things like dominate conversations. You know, when there was a group of people together, I would have to be the center of attention, which I still do to some extent. But it's, you know, it's down from like, you know, 80% to 20% because I have other outlets for it. I mean, to me, you know, being the demo slut and being the podcaster or being the speaker, even in, you know, my regular job, that sort of channels a lot of that need to be on stage in front of people, center of attention. That really helps, I think, with the rest of my life so that I can actually just shut up and listen to people sometimes instead of needing to be the center of attention.
How many conventions a year do you do, or demonstrations a year? I mean, are you strictly with the demo slut part? Is that the correct term? Demo slut, demo sub?
Demo slut is what I like.
Not a demo slut.
Or
okay.
Rope slut if you're specific to rope.
Gotcha. How many conventions for pay, a professional gig? How much is it just pure amateur for the love of it? How much is it a noisy bar? How much is that? You know, give me an idea of 500 performances a year, 50? I mean, how much of a hobby? How much of a part-time job is it? How does it work?
No, yeah, that tends to be for the community. There's really not a lot of money in that sort of thing.
Yeah, well.
But, and you know, we
it's actually, a growth industry.
You know, we just started going to conventions. I think ShibariCon 3 years ago was the first one. And that was the only one. We didn't really go to conventions. We just sort of did local get-togethers. And there's a, you know, night called Kinked and Leather and Lace in Madison, Wisconsin. And then last year we did ShibariCon, but then we also discovered Ohio Leather Fest. Someone at ShibariCon, one of the vendors at ShibariCon said, hey, you should go to Ohio Leather Fest. So I found a way to get, you know, both of us in without having to, we volunteered to do, he actually has a performance background, so he would do the MC.
Gotcha.
And, okay. You know, he would do that, and then I would either, I would be demo slut, or sometimes I teach water aerobics, so I'll teach, you know, bounce around in the pool for bondage. You know, it helps you stretch before a work, before a, you know, a scene or what okay. have you. And so we got into that, and that was just an incredible time. And so then we started looking to more, and we started, as our podcast became more popular, now we could spend all our time going to conferences, but we're both people of fairly modest means, and we simply don't have the money to, even if, you know, we can get our entrance fee comped, most conferences don't pay their speakers. And, you know, then, of course, there's the travel, which I just can't afford $1,000 of travel every month, which is what it usually ends up costing to fly somewhere, hotel, food, whatever. So we have to be very selective.
Yeah, driving around the Midwest at $3 a gallon.
Wait, hey, you don't have to tell me. My lover lives 150 miles away, both of them.
Oh, Lord.
And so, but what I did at the beginning
next time,
of this
get a
year,
lover near the metro. Yeah, that way you just jump on the train, you're there.
Or, you know, perhaps a lover in the city of 8 million people I actually live in. You know, that would be helpful. That might help a little bit.
That is funny. You're living in Chicago.
I live in Chicago. I have no lovers in Chicago.
150 miles out.
I know. I think it's a complex. Anyway. So we actually started choosing, like at the beginning of this year, I said, okay, here are the conferences I want to go to. I definitely want to go to Ohio Leather Fest again. That was amazing. We're obviously going to do Shibari Con. And then Folsom Street, which I've never been to. Just as an attendee, I'm going to go
listening
to that.
Listening to Fetish Flame, I now want to go to Folsom Street. Just
Podcast Expo.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even just going to those four, even if we can get our attendance comped, of course, it's, you know, it's considerable expense. Plus, he has a family. He has four kids, three of them at home. And so it's, you know, it's hard to get away. But we do as much as we can because I really enjoy it. The sense of community, the things that you learn, the people that you meet at these conferences. Never minding my exhibitionist streak where I get to walk into the play space and instantly be naked. God, I love being naked. Love taking my clothes off. Or half naked. You know, I just love being able to walk around wearing nothing but, you know, like some chains on my chest and a chainmail garter belt, and that's it. And I'm so comfortable doing that I forget, as I was saying today, it's so hot today and I just wanted to take my shirt off, and I almost did, forgetting that, oh, yeah, I can't do that.
Just walking
here.
Down the streets
just
of Rogers
down the
Park.
Street.
Just do.
I know. All right. I can't actually do that. And it's so comfortable and natural to me. I love it.
That's very cool. This is Cunning Minx from polyamoryweekly.com.
Yes.
You got to remember that. I have to tell you your web address.
polyamoryweekly.com.
Discussing the kinks of one of the hosts of the other popular Chicago. I don't know. There may be more. Are there any other Chicago sex casts? I think we're it, huh?
Not specifically sex. There's Feast of Fools, which is a gay
right.
cast.
Right, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, there's also Sex and the Second City.
Oh, I don't know
I'll
that
turn
one.
You on to that. It's more of an audio blog, but he's a really good writer, very interesting. It's a black homosexual guy, so not a point of view I get to listen to very often.
Yeah.
And he talks about dealing with, mostly about being a gay guy. It's less about race and more about sexual preference, but it's, you know, one night he's got two dates. How do you deal with that? He talks about he has
introduce them to each other.
Well, okay, yeah. Gay polyamory, certainly. But he talks about he has a big cock fetish and where that comes from, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's really interesting to get that point of view because, as you know, a straight guy in the kinky community, that for some reason the gay leather community and the kinky community take a lot from each other, but rarely do they cross over that often.
Yes.
Which drives me insane. Hmm. And I know we have a few homosexual listeners because I've gotten emails, you know,
right.
from them saying, hey, and if you are a homosexual listener in the Chicago area, feel free to get in touch with us. Just kinkysexradio.com. Kinky. At kinkysexradio.com. We hope you enjoyed this little testing of the studio, meeting of the sex cast. And it's been a joy talking to you. Thank you so much for coming in.
I know I enjoyed it. Thank you, Dr. Tom.
Take care.